Visa Geezer, Steve Barnes, Esquire.
How are you? Hello, Phil.
Good to see you. Welcome back. We've got some new things to talk about on the back of the policy address. But if I may, I want to go to a little email first from a listener.
Yeah, fire away. Let's
this
do
is
it.
From, we'll call him S, shall we see? I've got one question with regards to work visas in Hong Kong. I've been working here on the work visa for almost 1 year, so that means it's time to reapply for a new visa, which is 2 years valid. I now have the issue that I may want to change companies, either with the change of the visa or later on if I get my 2 years visa. I know it's hard to switch employers if you stick on the current visa. I also don't have a degree from Hong Kong. I'm going back to uni soon. I know it's very complicated and a bit of a grey area, and it's quite common.
Yeah, well, essentially, when he got his first visa, he was able to satisfy the immigration department that he passed the approvability test for the employment visa. That means he's got special skills, knowledge and experience of value to not readily available in Hong Kong. And when you get the first limit of stay, you get a one-year period.
Yep.
30 days before your current limit of stay expires, if you're still with the same employer, you make an application to extend your visa, and then you put onto what is presently, but will change as we'll discuss subsequently, into a 1, 2, 2, 3 year extension pattern. So if he makes this extension now with his existing employer, then he will get
that
2 year. Yes, absolutely. He'll get a 2 year limit of stay. However, if he's going to change employers before he applies for his extension, he's going to have to make what's known as a change of sponsorship application.
Right.
Which in many ways is just like making a new visa application, but principally if it's a like-for-like employment and the compensation is broadly commensurate with market rates, the Immigration Department generally look favourably on these change of sponsorship applications.
I.e. no big deal.
Yeah, assuming that the sponsor itself, the proposed employer, is deemed a suitable and credible sponsor. But assuming that that is the case, then these things tend to go through without too many problems. However, when you change employers, you start back on the what is presently 1, 2, 2, 3 year pattern of extension.
It resets.
Yeah. So for this gentleman, essentially, if he's looking for a 2 year limit of stay next time around, then the advice that I give to him is to remain with his current employer, go through the process of getting an extension to his current limit of stay, getting the 2 year limit of stay endorsed in his passport, then make his new arrangements for a new employer, and then make an application to change his sponsorship after he's got the 2 year limit of stay, because then he'll have a 2 year limit of stay and his approval, rather than being endorsed with a new label in his passport, will come in the form of a letter from the Immigration Department telling him that his current conditions of stay remain the same but is now sponsored by this new employer, and that his limit to stay is good to the 2 years that he's already got, or he got when he went through his past sponsorship.
So there are certain things that are, as a given, they'll say, well, he's sort of crossed a hurdle in the first place to get this visa.
Yeah.
So he's okay on this. So we're not going to dismiss him, basically.
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, principally, if it's a like-for-like employment, then, and the compensation is broadly commensurate with market rates, Immigration Department, basically, I don't say rubber stamp them because they never rubber stamp anything, but they look positively on these applications and tend to approve them more as a matter of administration rather than a matter of argument for approval.
Brilliant. So you're innocent until proven guilty, not the other way round.
Isn't that how the rule of law is structured in this fine town,
well, listen,
Mr. Whelan?
Thanks for getting in touch, mate. If he hasn't answered your question or you've got anything else to add, do get in touch. morningbrew@rthk.hk. I had my attention piqued a little bit, only a little bit, during the policy address, because some things do pertain to this area. What happened?
Well, we've had a bit of an earthquake, I suppose. A tremor, maybe. Whether it turns out to be the major development that we kind of hope it is, remains to be seen once things are fully implemented. But policy addresses effectively shifted principal policy away from attracting capital into Hong Kong, and now we're going to be attracting and seeking to retain talent in Hong Kong.
Retain or encourage?
Well, if you look at both in actual fact, but retain is principally driven by the adjustments that have been made to the extension of stay pattern that I've just described, depending on the visa type and the like. And I can go through them one by one if you wish, but we're moving principally from a 1, 2, 2, 3 year extension of stay pattern to a 2 plus 3 plus 3 year period of stay pattern, and that means that there isn't the requirement to go down to the immigration department.
And that clears
as often.
Their desk a bit, doesn't it?
It absolutely clears their desk a bit. It reduces their workload considerably. The advantage to the applicant in this instance is that they simply just don't have to go through the extension process as many times as they did before. However, in the main, unless you're earning $2 million Hong Kong dollars a year minimum, in the main, you still have to seek the permission of the immigration department to change your employers whilst you're here, notwithstanding the fact that you're going to get a 2 plus 3 year period of stay. But let me just go through the issues one more, because they've all got stories of their own, if you will. The first is that as of January the 15th, the $10 million Hong Kong dollar capital investment entrance scheme has been suspended. Whether it ultimately gets taken off the books or not remains to be seen. But this is where, essentially, if you put $10 million Hong Kong dollars into certain qualifying investment asset classes, these are kind of Hong Kong dollar denominated stocks, shares, currency, that kind of stuff, and you held those assets for a minimum period of 7 years, and you became ordinarily resident in Hong Kong throughout all of that time, just by parking your dough in Hong Kong, living here for 7 years, you could then go on to become a permanent resident. Principally, this program was designed for non-Chinese nationals because in 2003, when it was first introduced, because of the state of the current account between Hong Kong and China, it was essentially impossible for money to flow out of China to come into Hong Kong to participate in this scheme. However, some enterprising individuals latched onto the fact that there were certain residence programs in other countries that were vestiges of the pre-handover brain drain and the scaremongering that went on there. To the extent that a loophole for Chinese nationals was able to be exploited, and that loophole was that, yeah, you can't participate if you're Chinese national, if you're resident on the mainland, unless you have got permanent residency in a third country. The idea being there that the floodgates policy, which is designed to keep mainlanders sort of north of the boundary and us not being swamped, would be implemented by anticipating that most of these Chinese people would have gotten their PR from Canada, Australia. They would have made life quality of life moves into the countries and all the rest of that. However, the enterprising entrepreneurs that look to these old programs came up with Gambia. And Gambia, a West African country, was able to procure permanent residency for mainlanders overnight by paying a sum of between 100 and 150,000 Hong Kong dollars. So if you're a very wealthy mainlander participating in the capital investment entrance scheme, that kind of money wasn't too much to spend. So essentially we arrived at a situation where I think 90% of all applicants for this program were mainlanders who bought these Mickey Mouse PRs from the Gambia and other countries that, you know, introduced such Mickey Mouse programs such as Vanuatu. And the Immigration Department became completely swamped with applications.
Did they ask for it? You could say, yeah, come on, they...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like an oil tanker that sort of, you know, needs to be, has its course adjusted. It takes a bit of time for it to slow down and you realise the momentum that you've built up. And I think three things occurred to the Immigration Department. The first is we were getting a lot of mainlanders that were essentially entitled to residence in Hong Kong. Secondly, since 2003, capital was not really something that we've needed, and some people would argue, Jake Van de Kamp, for example, being one, that you never needed capital, got enough capital, and the international balance of payments scheme works. In actual fact, that money was never going to benefit Hong Kong nonetheless. And then finally, it just became apparent that the Immigration Department were ultimately swamped with all of these applications,
right,
and they needed to do something about it. So I think there are 12,000 unresolved applications at the moment. And I read this morning that on the last day, one particular immigration consulting firm in Hong Kong that has principally got a Chinese clientele, they're very big throughout China, submitted 150 applications on the very last day, immediately prior to it going into suspension. So, yeah, the Capital Investment Entrance Scheme is no longer on our books. Those applications that were in the pipeline being considered by the department, that is, have been filed, are going to go through the process of being completed, but that will put paid to the idea that we can attract capital to Hong Kong through that programme now. So
I wonder what the physical manifestations of that will be, because obviously, Steve, you have eyes and ears. This has become a big bone of contention in this town.
Yeah, but you know what's really interesting about this whole programme is that the vast majority of these approvals sold north of the... these visa types sold north of the boundary were sold on the basis of misrepresentation. Mm. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the way that immigration consulting tends to work in China, it's friends of friends of friends who are all opportunistically in the know, and they may have access to immigration consultants in Hong Kong who can, you know, give the advice and go through the procedures and all the rest of that. So what the immigration consulting fraternity north of the boundary did over the last few years is basically just tell the applicants whatever they needed to hear in order to get them to part with their money and agree to participate in the program. A lot of the line that was spun was, well, you just have to get the visa, and once you get your temporary ID card, after 7 years, if you maintain your visa throughout all that time, you'll qualify for permanent residency. But in actual fact, what's required to qualify for permanent residency is to come to Hong Kong and live in Hong Kong and be ordinarily resident here. And the vast majority of those Chinese people didn't do that in actual fact. So for the last two or three years, I've been picking up the pieces of these Chinese who have made their applications for the right of abode 7 years later. The original immigration consultants have gone to Baden-Baden, you know, to spend their ill-gotten gains taking the spas. You know, these poor people that had a reasonable expectation that they're going to end up with the right of abode in Hong Kong and the HKSAR passport, which is an incredibly valuable travel document,
right,
essentially ended up with the only immigration status that was available to them, which was unconditional stay. An unconditional stay is a decent status to have. It meant they could uplift their 10 million Hong Kong dollars, but unconditional stay is really just unconditional stay. It's administrative convenience. You don't need to maintain any kind of criteria for approval to get it beyond staying in Hong Kong on at least one occasion in every 365-day given period.
So that's been addressed.
So, well, in as much as the program's now suspended, there's not going to be any other people that are essentially going to qualify for this program now, and so there's not going to be too many mainlanders coming through, the Gambia, Vanuatu, 10 million Hong Kong dollars, sit and do nothing, and expect to get permanent residency route.
All right, what else have we got? I mean, that's something that you said some of these are going to be maybe rather small, but that's quite a big one.
That's quite a big one because the emphasis was to shut that program down, and it had its own problems and probably needed shutting down anyway, but it was a bit of a foil for the idea that perhaps we should be creating policy that encourages talents to come to Hong Kong.
All right.
And those talents to remain in Hong Kong. So the second sort of shift that's gone on is in relation to the business investment visa. Now, the business investment visa is where you invest capital in Hong Kong and you create an operating business, you create jobs, you have suitable business premises, you show that you can substantially benefit Hong Kong as a result of your commercial activities.
Yep.
Well, it used to be that there was one visa type called the business investment visa. It's actually issued under the general employment policy. It's an employment visa issued on the investment criteria, but I've always called it the business investment visa to differentiate it from the capital investment capital investment visa. Well, now the Immigration Department have responded positively to consultation widely, to the extent that they've recognised that Hong Kong's economy is changing and that there should essentially be two types of business investment visas. There should be one for entrepreneurs, which is classically what's gone on previously.
Yeah.
No change there, but there is a change, but that's classically how it is. And then there should be another one for startups. Now, traditionally, startups have always been poorly capitalized, not going to create jobs straight away. There's always big question marks about their long-term viability. Therefore, they're never going to be able to make a substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong, objectively assessed, because of the very nature of being a startup. But the Immigration Department realized that, that there has been a problem in dealing with startups in the old regime. So now what they've said is, if you're a startup, so to speak, then you make your application under the normal criteria for what is now called the entrepreneur visa, substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong. But if you've been able to finagle a place on one of these government-backed incubator-type programs, such as run by Cyberport, InvestHK, yeah, they have the Start Me Up HK program.
Mega event thing?
I don't know about that. But anyway,
one of those.
There are five named incubator-type programs.
Right.
Anyway, if you're a startup, you make your application for an investment visa, a business investment visa, along the typical entrepreneurial lines, but if you can get yourself a place on these incubators, then the Immigration Department will, quote, favourably consider your application, which is kind of synonymous with, well, okay, if they've passed a due diligence for the startup program, then
they should be all right.
Yeah, and ostensibly, you know, those organizations should have the ability to determine whether or not there's any real merit in this startup organization entity. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't have have approved them in the first place.
Is this good news or bad news?
Well, it's good news because startups could never previously, you know, anticipate a really solid chance of approval under the old criteria.
Yeah.
Now, if they can get associated with one of these businesses, then kind of they're on their way, which isn't a bad thing.
That's not bad news because you said it was like it was chicken and egg, wasn't it? Before you have to prove you can do so and so, but in the meantime, you're trying to start your business.
Right. That's the catch-22. Yeah. And that still prevails, by the way. But that deals with startups now. On the other stream, which is the classic stream, which is now termed the entrepreneur stream, it's business as usual. However, the Immigration Department are finally going to lift the lid a little bit on what's required for approval. So they're going to spell out the kind of things that the Immigration Department expect to see for an approved application.
So far, the things you've talked about, we've got time for one more, I reckon. But so far, the things you've talked about will probably be met approvingly?
I think so, yeah, because it will all depend on what really happens to the substantive consideration of each application and what themes emerge, and we'll only know that over the course of the next 6 to 12 months. But I realise we're almost out of time, but there are two other areas of interest. The first is in relation to employment visas. In the employment visa now, 1-2-2-3-year pattern,
yeah,
it's going to move to 1+3+3. Unless you earn $2 million Hong Kong dollars a year, in which case you're going to go from 2 to 6 years.
Okay.
And
it's better though.
And you don't have to report to the Immigration Department. You don't have to seek the Immigration Department's permission before you change employers. You just have to notify them 30 days after the fact.
They've relaxed the leash a little bit.
Yeah, very much so. And it's the same for admission of mainland talents and professionals scheme, which is very similar to the regular work visa type thing, but this is designed specifically for mainlanders.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's one other change in relation to the quality migrant admission scheme. This is a top-notch scheme. Again, it's going from it's going to 2+3+3. Or if you're a $2 million earner, 2+6. Or if you've won a Nobel Peace Prize, or you've won a gold medal in the Olympics, or you're a concert virtuoso, and the Immigration Department approve you on that basis, you get an 8-year limit of stay right from the very get go.
If you're from this part of the world and you win a Nobel, though, you get locked up. So I wouldn't go too far down that one. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
And two closing comments. The first is that generally they're looking for a wider pool of talent under that program, mm-hmm. and there could well be an occupation in demand list released in the not too distant future. It remains to be seen. And then finally, you get more points under the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme if you've attended a top 100 worldwide university.
Top tips indeed from you today, Steve. I think somebody somewhere is going to be saying, oh, I'm really glad about that. Steve Barnes is the Hong Kong Visa Geezer. We'll talk in a few weeks.